Okay, thank you. My co-author on this work are David Donoho, Michaela, Gerald Fadili, and my students, Jean Bobin, Gaston Wooden, and Pierre Aboya. Okay, my talk will be decomposed in several parts. I will first make a small introduction to the cosmic microwave background, just to explain what are the problems. And then I will introduce you what we have developed a few years ago, what you call morphological component analysis, and the idea was to use morphological diversity of the structures contained in the data in order to improve the analysis. Now we see the more recent work, how we can extend this MCA technique to multi-channel data. This is very recent work. And finally, we see that how these tools can be applied for this Planck project, which is the future project for observing the cosmic microwave data. Okay? And these two parts are completely not related to astrophysics. It's really very general for data analysis. It can be applied in any domain, like medical imaging or whatever. Only the last part is more dedicated to the problem of astrophysics. Okay, so for people, everybody knows that there is this famous theory, the Big Bang theory, which tells us that after the Big Bang, there's an inflation, and then 300,000 years later, then you have the first observation, the first thing that you can observe in the sky. The universe starts to be transparent, and then you can observe this cosmic microwave background. And here we saw that it's not completely flat, there's some fluctuation, and this fluctuation due to the gravity at the end creates all these structures that we see today. Okay, if the first observation really in favor of the Big Bang was this radiation of 3 degree Kelvin, which is a perfect black body. Okay, when it was discovered, it was really a good argument for the theory of the Big Bang. And it's a perfect black body, and the error bar are multiplied by 50 in order to see them on this curve. Okay, and it's very homogeneous, and the first strong argument for this for the theory was the observation by Kobe, where the fluctuation that was predicted is very small, the fluctuation has the order of 10 to the minus 5, okay, and this fluctuation has been observed a few years ago, and you see that it's not completely flat, there is this small fluctuation that we were expected. Okay, and if you look at the spectrum, at the proper spectrum of this fluctuation, then we see that this peaks. And here's at the last data, the WMAP satellite, which have produced this data, and we get this image, and from this image we get compute the power spectrum, and from the power spectrum you can make all the cosmology, find the quantity of matter and everything. So the way the problem is to find this power spectrum from the data. Okay, the next project on which I'm working will be a satellite project. It will be launched next year, and it will be the successor of WMAP. And we will have a better resolution, we'll have better sensitivity, and we'll have more channels. With WMAP, there was only 5 channels. Here, we'll have 9 channels. Okay. And if you want also to use WMAP channels, then it will be 9 plus 5. So you can use 14 channels in order to extract the information we want. And obviously, the resolution is not the same for each channel, so we have these different channels. And each map will have this size, and I will explain you. So this is the number of channels, 9, and I will explain you why is this factor of 12 is here. It's due to pixelization. And the problem is to find CMB image. And then for this, there's a working group which is organized, where each group tries to develop tools and techniques in order to extract this radiation from simulated data of Planck. Okay, so what is the problem is that, in fact, you don't observe directly this data, because from this cosmic microwave background, CMB, and us, there is all the features. Okay, you have the noise of the detector first, but then you have the galactic emission, so this dust and synchrotron, free, and then you have the galaxy, which emits also some lights, and the cluster of galaxies, and then only CMB. So what you see is a kind of coaddition of all these effects. Okay? And then, instead of having the CMB, you get such image where you see on the galactic plane here, you see the dust, for instance, that you have in our galaxy. So the problem is, from these images, how can we recover this one? It's really a problem of multi-channel problem where we are interested in one component. Okay, so for Planck, it'll be the same. We will have, because it's not 10, but we'll have 9 observations, and we will have the different components. Okay, what you have to know also is, for people who are working in cosmology, only the two first are of interest, okay? While they don't care about the galactic emission. But there is other astronomers who are working on modeling the dust in the galaxy. For them, these two components, just know, they just want to remove it. But depending on the domain you are working, you are interested in one of these components, and the only thing you want is to remove the others, okay? So today I will discuss how you can try to recover the CMB. So the problem is, it's not only everything is mixed, but it's also that the PSF is different for each channel, the noise is different for each channel, and what else? And the last one is, here I wrote linear combination, but even this is already a crude approximation. It's a linear combination for several components like CMB and SD, and for SNF3 also, it's a dust emission also, but for this component and this component, in fact, the spectral index is varying spatially. Okay, that means that the linear combination depends on the position of the image. It's not pure linear combination. So already writing the equation this way is already an approximation. Okay, the second point you have to know is we don't have directly one image. In fact, we send a satellite, and the satellite is observing one point in the sky, and you get one value. Okay, then we move the satellite, and then you get a second value. And after 1 year, we have observed the whole sky. Okay, so after 1 year only, we have an image of the whole sky, and then it's an image on the sphere, okay, which looks this way. Okay, that's the different component that we expect to be in the galaxy, in the sky, and we will have such images on the whole sky. So we need to have data to manipulate data on the sphere. And in astrophysics, one of the main tools to manipulate data on the sphere is now Hilbix. It's a kind of pixelization which has some quite interesting properties, such the surface of each pixel is the same. Okay, that's very important for astronomers, that each pixel has the same surface of the sky. So how it works, you have 12 faces, you represent the sphere with 12 faces, and then each face is divided by n pixels. Okay, we have 12. The total number of pixels is 12 multiplied by this parameter, which is related to the resolution you want, multiply square. Okay, so we have 12 faces, and each face is represented by 12 by 12, n by n pixels. And then you have all these tools are available. Then you can compute spherical harmonics, which are the software is available and free. And typically, that's the simulated data that we expect with Planck and the different channels. And here's what it looks like. And the one where the CMB is dominating is at 100 GHz. And we see that even at these channels, and you have a lot of galactic emission. But the problem now is to find a way to extract the CMB. So what are the methods which have been used up to now? The main method is what you call template fitting. So people are doing model, and they are modelizing the dust, the synchrotron emission, the SD emission, and they subtract this modeling from the data. So it's very crude, and it's not very satisfactory. There is some other group which try to make a spectrum, to fit each pixels, and to find the spectral index of the different components. That's another approach. The interesting point in this approach is you don't have to make any approximation on the fact that it's a linear combination, because then you, for each pixel, you try to recover all the spectra, but then it's very sensitive to the noise, and it doesn't work very well. So there are other groups which have been worked for the last years on different techniques like independent component analysis. So people who are working, they're processing, they know very well these techniques, And then you make this approximation that your data Y is a linear, it's a product of a matrix A, which is the column, the spectrum of your data, in fact, multiplied by the sources that you are looking for. Okay, so the problem is knowing Y, you are looking for A and X. So you are looking for these two unknown, and it's a problem which is called blind source separation. And in fact, techniques which implement this kind of algorithm, like JAD or FastCCA, the assumption which is behind in order to find these two unknown is that first the sources are uncorrelated, they are statistically independent, and the second point is that you consider that you use the fact, you try to maximize non-Gaussianity in order to find the solution. Okay, all the algorithms are, the idea behind this is to try to maximize the non-Gaussianity. But here is the problem for the CMB. Why is the problem? Because the CMB is a pure Gaussian process. Okay, if I come back to this image of the CMB, okay, here the CMB in the theory is just a Gaussian generalization of this power spectrum. Okay, so if you try to have as an assumption that everything is not Gaussian, then you have directly the very strong, very wrong assumption in order to solve the problem. Okay, so that's the reason why these techniques are not perfect. The second problem is that you can find also with this technique, it's very hard to also to introduce some information which is known. For example, the column, the spectrum of the CMB is very well known. So how to use this information in the problem? It's not too easy with this kind of algorithm. So more recently, so that is the first paper was in 98, but there were several versions of this MICA techniques. And here, the idea is completely different. Here, the assumption is that everything is Gaussian. So everything is Gaussian, and then you try to maximize some properties, and then you get a solution. But again, it's not very perfect, because there's only one component which is Gaussian. All the others, they are not Gaussian. But at least, for the CMB, it works quite well. And you can really consider also that you know some information about the mixing matrix. It's not completely blind. Okay, but then in 2004, there was a very, very important event in the world. There was this IPAM program. And for people who were there, they had the opportunity to discuss with many researchers here and really enjoy all the discussion with Peter, Emmanuel, Francois, and all the others. And but what happened is that when you get out of this program, you had only one word in mind, is sparsity. Okay. Sparsity was really the key point of the program. So there was all this new idea of compressed sensing and so on, which happened here. So sparsity was really the key point here. Then when I tried to, and at the same time, we have developed these techniques, which was called MCA. And the idea with MCA was to find a fast algorithm to represent the data when the data are very specific. And the idea was here that this idea of sparsity was you want to represent the data on a dictionary of shapes. Okay, you have these elements, and you want to represent this signal with a minimum of coefficients. So you have to try to minimize this L0 norm, which is the number of coefficients alpha. Okay, but you want that your data, your coefficients projected on your dictionary represent exactly your data. So that was this idea of sparsity, to represent the data with the minimum of coefficients. But when you do that, you don't have a very fast algorithm, except if you are using a transform like the wavelet transform or the Fourier transform, then you have a very fast algorithm. But if you don't have one specific transform, then you need to have some very some algorithms which are quite heavy. Then people are using wavelet for these reasons, or curvelets, or this kind of decomposition, but they're using one decomposition. But what is clear is that each decomposition is very well adapted to one kind of feature. For example, if you use a Fourier transform, it's very good for oscillating features. If you use a wavelet transform, it's very good for features of different sizes, but which are more or less isotropic. if you use curlet, it's better to analyze curlet with when the feature are like edges, okay, filaments or edges. You don't see that there is, it's not clear the relation. But there is line on this image, so you have to imagine that there is line. But what can we do if there is such images where you have lines and Gaussians? So there is not a single transform, and here what you would like to use, in fact, is several transforms, and to use the fact that you have several transforms and several and fast operators, and to use this operator to have a fast decomposition. And here, this is exactly the idea with MCA, and to use this morphological diversity. So you want to build a dictionary, phi, which is a union of different dictionaries, but each sub-dictionary is related to a fast transform. So you can use, for instance, curvelet and wordlet, so curvelet and DCT. And then you have, so this dictionary is the sum of different dictionaries, and then you will have coefficients on each sub-dictionary, and then you want to have a representation of your data on this dictionary, which is a sum of different dictionaries. So that's the way we wanted to implement this MCA technique. And this had led to different algorithms. And the first one was, okay, this MCA algorithm. So what we wanted to do is to separate the image into two components, for instance, S1 and S2, and each one being sparse in one representation. So for instance, T1 will be the wordlet transform, and T2 will be the curlet transform, and then we'll have S1 will be the image reconstructed from the wordlet coefficient, and S2 the image from the curlet coefficient. So you want to minimize the coefficients related to the two sources, subject that you get an exact representation. And this technique has related to another application, which was interpretation of missing data. So if you have missing data, the algorithm was very, very close, and you have only to add the mask of the missing data. So you want to minimize this term only where you have some information. And this was 2 or 3 years ago that we have published these papers, and I will show you that how it works. Okay, I think we don't see very well. Okay, this is a simulation where you have one image plus lines and Gaussian plus noise, and then here you use wordlets and curvelets. And minimizing this equation, then you have one part, S1 will be the wordlet part, and S2 will be the curvelet part, and the sum of the two is this image, and then we have the result. We can really separate blindly one image into several components, just using the fact that one component is sparse in a given representation. Another application of the same technique was texture and cartoon part separation. So you have one image which contains texture plus the boy, and then you see that using it was curlet and DCT, because DCT is good for texture, then you can separate these two components. That's the same kind of results, where you have one image and you separate into two components, cartoon part and texture. Okay, for the inpainting technique, so you have some missing data, okay, and you will try to again to minimize these two components, one being sparse in the curlet domain and one being sparse in the local DCT domain, and you see that even with 20%, you can very well recover the original image. And here with 50%, you can still recover the information, and here with 80% of missing data, and you can still have a correct reconstruction of the data. Oh, here is another image of a zebra, then you can create a mask and free the zebra from the cage. Okay, just interpolating the part related to the cage. Okay. All these ideas were developed in 2004, 2005, and then the main idea was how can we extend this idea to try to make this component separation based on the same concept, using sparsity. And okay, new idea means that you need a new student, and then Jérôme Bovin came to my lab to start a PhD, and then we developed this general MCA, and if the student is good, then you have publication, which is the case here. And then at the end, so the idea was we still have several sources, but what you want is to have each source which is a sum of components. Okay? So what you will observe is a linear combination of A with the sources, but each source is a sum of different components. And each component will be sparse in a given basis. Then doing this, you have this kind of relation. Then the data are linear combination also on the component that you are looking for. And we can have a representation. And what we will do is to try to minimize this equation. But this time, you also have the matrix to find. Okay, the mixing matrix has to be defined. Okay, but you have at the end we have a very similar algorithm. Maybe it's not the idea to spend time just describing the algorithm, but the algorithm is quite fast, and you will see that it works quite well. And this time it's a simple. You can call it EIC, it's a kind of IC technique, but where the only key, the only way to find the sources is sparsity, to find a sparse representation of the data. And here's an example. You have four images, and you have you observe four, okay, I show it only two here, but you have four mixture of these four images. And the problem is, when you have four of such images, how can you recover so general image. I show you here how it works, and you get the components. And even if the several images are very close, you can still recover the different images. Each source is assumed to be a sum of kind of curved component and local DCP component. Okay, so each source is assumed as a sum of a kind of texture part and a cartoon part. And then you minimize these two components, you find a sparse representation of these two components in two domains. And this for the four image together. And this is, it is exactly what the algorithm produces. Okay, here's another example where you have two images and you have two mixtures plus noise. So if you apply a kind of standard technique like JAL, which is a kind of ICA technique, here is what you get. Mm-hmm. And you see that separation is not very good, because you see that, for instance, you see the two houses where there's only one here. Okay, and here you have the two, you have the two houses. Also, you see the boat, which is here, you see it here, and the one which is here. So the separation is not perfect, while doing this technique, it's much better.
How many
views do you get? So here it was two sources, two observations, and two sources.
Okay. And you just start to downsample if you try to solve the cocktail party problem with less microphones and people speaking.
No, this is not for this
so
problem.
As many microphones.
You need at least the number of sources that you have.
Okay.
So it looks to me that the mixture figures and the J, I don't see much difference.
And what?
The column of mixtures and then column of J, there's not much difference.
Between this one and this one, you
mean? Yeah.
You're right, maybe there is, maybe all the four are shared results. So.
But it makes your result look better.
No, but it's clear that Chad didn't support this feature. No, okay, so we make a first toy model for our problem, astrophysical problem. So here we have, you only put three components, CMB, dust, and SD. So again, the image is not very good. So you have a lot of points objects here. That was a small mistake in my talk. Okay, I come back to the I come back to the GMC technique. Okay, when you have this GMC multi-channel component separation, we can immediately add a kind of imprinting technique in the same way. And for instance, here we have using Barbara, we have putting something like 80% of missing pixels, and here is what you could recover. Okay. And the it works for images, but it works also for audio signal. So here is a so it's, you have two channels, and you have some missing parts. Okay, it's very bad for the eye, for the to hear. And using GNC, it's not really perfect, but you see that it works quite well. Okay, so coming back to our problem in astrophysics now, so we have six channels, and we have used only three components here, and we have simulating six channels, and we have compared GMCA to other techniques, you know, to see how it works. And we have used different noise level, and here you have the noise level, and here you have the error on the mixing matrix. And here that's the noise level we expect with the Planck project at this level. Now what we see is, this is the result that we have with JAD, and even it's a kind of improved JAD technique because you apply, you first transform all the channels in the valid domain, and then you apply JAD. Otherwise JAD doesn't work at all. And here is what, if you think at this thing that I told you before, and here's the result that we have GMC, the error is always lower than the other techniques. And if you look at the correlation between the component that you have recovered with the original component, so we see that you are always better than the others. So for the CMB, which is Gaussian, so we see that we are just a little bit better than SMICA, but for LZ, which is completely non-Gaussian, then we see that you are much better than SMICA. Okay, and if you compare, because SMICA make the assumption that everything is Gaussian. If you compare with JAD, where the assumption is that everything is not Gaussian, then JAD does a very bad job on the CMB part, but JAD is not bad at all for the SD part. But whatever the component, GMCA was always better. And for GMCA, it's quite easy to also to introduce some information. For instance, for this kind of component separation technique for the CMB, we know the spectrum of the CMB. This is something which is very well known. So there is no, it's quite ridiculous to search for the mixing matrix, this column of the CMB. But in JAD, with our algorithm, it's very easy to introduce this information at each iteration, because it's an iterative algorithm. At each iteration, we have just to force one column of the matrix. And then we can, again, improve the result. This is GMCA without the a priori information of the matrix. And here is GMCA with knowing the one column of the matrix. And we can again improve the results. Okay? Now, if you come back to data on the sphere, okay, so we have seen here we have the five double map channels, but now we have to manipulate this data on the sphere. And the question is, how can we do that? Because now if you want to use GMCA on the sphere, you need some transform on the sphere, some multiscale transform on the sphere. So we have developed wavelet, widget, and current on the sphere, and in order to be able to apply this GMCA technique on the sphere. And the way that we did it for the wavelets, we introduced, in fact, a very similar decomposition that we have for 2D images, which is a kind of isotropic decomposition for the wavelet part, where you assume that your data are obtained using a scanning function, which is phi, but the only thing we'll do is we'll express everything in the spherical harmonics. The phi is a kind of low-pass filtering, and then we can derive the same image at a lower resolution just by using this filter H, and the information between two resolutions will be derived using the filter G. Now, this is very similar to the standard wavelet theory, except that everything is expressed in the Fourier domain, and the Fourier domain is spherical harmonics domain, and then you get an easy way to make a wavelet decomposition. Okay, so the point is that you can have a very easy reconstruction. You can just co-add all the wavelet coefficients at a given position to recover the original signal. Okay, so if you start from this image, so here will be the first scale, the second one, the third, and so on. And so you get this five images, it's a wavelet transform with five scales, and the simple addition of these five images will produce exactly the original image. So you have a transformation but also a reconstruction. And when the, one of the main motivations for building the world transformed sphere is that all existing world transformed didn't have a reconstruction. And we need this reconstruction. Okay, because of the heat mix representation, we can also downsize each image without each scale without, without losing any information. Okay, so only the first one will have the same size as the original one, but then we can divide by 4 the number of pixels at each resolution. That's another property of this heat mix representation.
So, by the way, do you learn anything from this wavelet transform picture about the actual CMP, or you learn nothing? You learn that it's mostly Gaussian?
Okay, most of the non-Gaussianity tests are done in the wavelet space, actually, already. But people are using continuous wavelets. So this tool can also be another way to search for non-Gaussianity, and we use it already for that. And I can come back.
Can you see any of it here? I mean, can one just look at this and see any non-Gaussianity?
Okay, there is some claim of non-Gaussianity for them. There is this, I don't know. Don't you remember there is this cold spot that people discuss?
Yeah.
So the cold spot, you can use this transform and to make a kind of thresholding at, I don't know, 4 sigma, for instance, and reconstruct, and indeed you get the cold spot. Mm-hmm. The only problem is, shall you believe that the cold spot is true or not? Okay, that's the main point. And what people are doing is, there are some people who really believe strongly in this cold spot. And I made a small study, is if you just create some simulation and you make several transforms of the simulation and you make a 4 sigma detection and you reconstruct, how many times in 100 you will find cold. And in fact, I need only 20 resolution to get the cold spot. Okay? And why? Even if it's 4 sigma detection, because you have multiple testing, all the scales. Okay? And more you are scales, even if you 4 sigma at each scale, the final probability of 4 detection is not a 4 sigma detection. And what people say is they are doing a lot of scale because at the beginning it was continuous wavelet transform. So people are doing, I don't know, 20 scales and they find something at 4 sigma and they say, oh, non-Gaussianity at 4 sigma. And then there is another guy who came and said, okay, now I have another transform which is also directional transform. Then you multiply the number of scale by the number of directions. So you have even more more information. And they say, oh, I have 5 sigma detection. Okay? Then I think that this detection of the cold spot may really due just to the problem of multiple testing. So what I have done is I have using this FDR technique, fault discovery rate technique, some people may know. So you have a lot of coefficients, you take all of them together, and you say that to the FDR, you fix yourself the probability of wrong detection. Say, for instance, the alpha parameter is 0.1, it means that you have something like 10% of the detection which may be wrong. Okay? And then using this, I didn't have any detection. So I put alpha equal 20%. 20% of the detection may be wrong, no detection. So I increase this alpha parameter until 60. So to find the cold spot, I had to increase this alpha parameter to 60, that means 60% of wrong detections. So to my point of view, the cold spot is really due to the statistics. Wrong statistics, wrong results.
What about the axis of equal?
Yeah. Okay, now there is another kind of thing. On this point, I didn't make any study myself. So there is some people who claim that there is something. Other claim that it's only 2 sigma, so it can be real. But on this point, really, I don't have any study. I didn't make any study myself, so I cannot say my point of view on this. But it's clear that people are doing statistics in a very strange way sometimes, and then they immediately go to information which is not clearly true. So, another way to make widgets on the sphere is now to use this heat mix representation. I told you that you have these 12 faces, and you can try to take each face and then take it as an image and using a widget transform on this image. Then just doing this, you have a very easy way to have rigid transform on the sphere. Okay, so here a rigid transform produces some lines features in the data. And you can extend it on the, to the current transform. For this, we just have to apply first the two-dimensional wavelet transform on the sphere, that's the first transform I show you, and then on each scale, you apply a rigid transform on the sphere. And then you have curvet on the sphere, and you have this kind of shape for the curvet. So we have different transforms now, and you have spherical harmonics, so now you have four transforms that you can use the way you want in order to do MCA. So the first thing we can try to do is in painting, okay? I told you that people are trying to find the power spectrum of, this data, but because of this galactic emission, what they do first is just they mask completely the galactic part, okay? Because they don't believe on the result of the component separation on the galactic part because the dust emission is too strong. Mm-hmm. Then people mask something like 30 or 40% of the pixels, and then they try to recover the power spectrum from this data. And there are different techniques to do that. Okay, so in painting on the sphere, it will be very similar, so you want to minimize the data minus the mask to apply to your solution, which is minimum, but then you want your data to be sparse in the spherical harmonic domain, for instance. Mm-hmm. And then you have the same kind of algorithm, which is quite fast. And here is one image, and I put some missing pixels, and here's what we recover from these three images. So here you have 75% of missing pixels, and here we do an in-painting in the curvet domain. Okay. So now for the CMB. So here is, for instance, W map. Here is the mask. And now here is the in-painting, what it produces. Okay. And this in-painting technique is quite interesting for many kind of application where, for instance, if you want to apply Gaussian entity test on this image, and people are using, for instance, the bispectrum. But the mask in the bispectrum is really a problem. So if you have an in-painting which works properly, then you can use the in-painting image in order to find the Gaussian entity. Okay? And if I take the wavelet transform on the in-painting image at the first scale, then you see that you don't see at any scale the effect of the mask. It works quite well. Here is, for the larger scale, here is the original CMB at the larger scale, and here's what has been recovered. Okay, so it's quite close. It's not completely ridiculous what you reconstructed. And now here is the power spectrum of the in-painting map. So the power spectrum, I don't think you see very well. Here is, if you compute the power spectrum on the mask data, so the image, so here you have a very strong bias, and you can try to correct it. And here in blue, you have the corrected power spectrum, and still in white, you have the real one. So we see that there is still a bias. While if you are using the power spectrum on the in-painting map, we see that you have removed this bias. So this is quite important for cosmological aspect. And here is the error. So we see that's the error if you are using the corrected power spectrum just from the mask. And here's the error if you are using the in-painting technique. Okay, so now coming back to this Planck problem. So we have 9 channels, this is the simulations, and we apply GMCA on these 9 channels. But we force one column to be the column of the CMB, because we know it. And here is what we have recovered. So start from this 9 image, and we get this. Okay. So it's not bad, it's not perfect. We see that there is still some galactic emission which are here. So on the galactic plane, it's not perfect, and we are still trying to improve it. But I think it's very promising. And here is the power spectrum that's the continuous was the original power spectrum in the simulation, and the dotted line are what you have recovered. So now we are trying to find the error bars. We are working on estimating the error bars on our estimation. So the conclusion on this talk are the following. So in order to prepare this Planck project, we have first extended all the multiscale transform we wanted to use. Well, it's just curved in the sphere. And then we have extended this MCA imprinting technique to the sphere. And for the component separation, we have developed a completely original approach for separating the components, which is very more general than problem in astrophysics, can be used in any kind of problems. And but many things need to remain to be done. First, as I told you, we want to estimate the error bar on the final power spectrum. So this should be relatively straightforward. What you would like also to do is to find a way to use all the information we have on the components. Okay, we have some we have already some observation of the dust of the synchrotron effect. So how to use this low resolution information in order to improve the results? This is really something we need to do. It's completely ridiculous to do as if you didn't know anything. Okay, so we know already some information about the sky. We know we have some model of the dust, and it works until a given resolution, and you have to use this. And finally, the last part, which is, to my point of view, quite challenging, is Planck will produce polarized data. Okay, so we don't have only the temperature, we have the polarization. So we want to make a GMCA which works on polarized data. And finally, this is already ongoing work. And we want to extend this GMC technique to hyperspectral data. Thank you.